It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we're about to explore a rich history of activism in Wisconsin with the Brown Berets. But first, the percentage of Wisconsin high school students enrolling directly into college is falling. And as Rich Kramer reports, the decline is gradual but has some big implications for institutions already facing significant and long-term enrollment challenges.
UW-Platteville's Richland campus is mostly quiet on this cold Wednesday in February. The only sounds come from the babbling Brush Creek and an occasional car pulling onto campus. Freshmen Jackson Kinney and Heath Zumach are studying alone in the Wallace Student Center cafeteria. Kinney says he's heard there are only 60 students at the campus, down from the fall enrollment count of 75.
Will this campus be here in 5 years? I've heard that question a lot, and we hope it is, but with enrollment this low, it makes you wonder how that is able to happen and how they're able to support themselves.
Kinney says he likes the small class sizes and is saving money by staying close to home. But enrollment at UW-Platteville Richland has fallen by nearly 87% from a peak of 567 students in 2014. Between 2010 and 2021, the UW's 13 two-year campuses lost about 7,400 students. UW System Chief Data Analyst Ben Passmore says that's a huge challenge, in part because two-year campuses are access points for students who may not go to college otherwise.
It seems pretty clear that the attractiveness of that kind of associate route, or certainly to follow that all the way through the associate's degree and transfer, declined over this last decade. I don't have a great theory as to why.
Passmore says one thing is clear. Fewer high school graduates in Wisconsin are going directly to college. His office is analyzing data from the State Department of Public Instruction, showing 59% of grads in 2015 enrolled as freshmen the same year. In 2019, that fell to 56%. The decline was higher among men than women. And at Wisconsin Technical Colleges, enrollment fell by more than 34% over the last decade. Administrators attribute that to a strong economy, low birth rates, and an aging population. Technical College System President Morna Foy says two-year college enrollment typically increases with unemployment, but that didn't happen despite job losses during the pandemic.
You know, typical decline around 2 to 3% annually dropped to 19% over the last 2 years.
She says new challenges for working parents, like the loss of childcare options and public school closures, likely meant a pause for tech college plans. As for the longer trend, Foy says higher education is changing, and more people are seeking degrees or certifications after starting careers. And more high schools are offering associate degree programs. Some two-year UW System campuses are responding by offering four-year bachelor's degrees. That's what UW-Green Bay's locations in Manitowoc, Marinette, and Sheboygan started doing in 2019. They're the only UW two-year campuses to see enrollment grow in the last 2 years. Chancellor Michael Alexander says the university is purposely ceding ground to area technical colleges.
We're still going to offer associate's degrees as part of what we do, but we're not going to compete for a student who's choosing between us and the technical college.
Sarah Burmish is in her third year of classes on UW-Green Bay's Sheboygan campus. She's saving money on her nursing degree by going to school in her hometown. The five-year program is split between the Sheboygan campus, a nearby tech college, and a year of online classes at UW-Green Bay.
This was a really safe option just to like come and sit, take some classes while I was trying to figure out my life.
The declining number of high school graduates going directly to college in Wisconsin means schools are going to have to figure out more ways to meet students like Burmish where they are. It's a critical challenge for institutions hoping to adapt and reverse long-term enrollment declines. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And tomorrow we'll hear more about high school grads going straight to work. And you can read more on these trends online anytime at WPR.org. Now, the Brown Berets of Wisconsin. Last Thursday's Green Bay Press Gazette ran an in-depth article about our state's growing Hispanic and Latino populations, sharing stories of new residents alongside the stories of families that have lived here for generations. The headline of that article reads, "Latino people have a long history in Wisconsin. Here's how they've shaped the economy and found the American dream." Well, part of that how has to be the story of organizing, taking action, and inviting the rest of Wisconsin to unite and be a part. So what do you know about the Brown Berets of Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation. Email always available to you, ideas@WPR.org. Maria Cruz is a retired educator who is documenting the histories of the Brown Berets. She's writing a book with a tentative title, Los Brown Berets de Wisconsin. Maria, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
So give us a brief history, if you would, of the Brown Berets. How far back does their activism in Wisconsin go?
In Wisconsin, it started in the late 1960s. I would say about 1969. The initial organizers were Ernesto Chacon, Juan Alvarez, and Raul Cano. They were, however, a part of a broader movement, which was called the Chicano movement of the 60s and the 70s. The Brown Berets here in Wisconsin were part of the larger organization of the Latin American Union for Civil Rights under the direction of Ernesto Chacon. They were a very well-organized group of young men and women. And I stress young men and women. The Brown Berets were a youth movement that they had in common the following. Most of them were of Texas descent. That is to say, they came from Texas as migrant workers into the state of Wisconsin. Some of them were students at UWM. And one of them, at least, was still a teenager in high school, probably. We'll hear from her later. So it was a youth movement within a broader Chicano movement.
A youth movement here in Wisconsin that started in the 60s, and as I understand, some 400,000 guest workers came to Wisconsin every year. So what were some of the conditions like for farm workers in Wisconsin at this time?
They were dire.
Yeah.
I'll let our next speaker, Ramona Villarreal, speak to that because she herself was a migrant worker. But I once said in another context that living here in Wisconsin for migrant workers was the best of times and the worst of times. Mm. It was the worst of times because of the conditions under which they had to labor. The important thing about the labor of these individuals is they provide for us, and even to this day, they provided for us, and to this day, what we eat on our table. Yeah. And it was at a great sacrifice. But it was also the best of times because they were a cohesive group of people. And out of that, out of their struggle, out of their strife, out of the terrible working conditions, they were able to survive. And they were able to set a footprint in the history of Wisconsin.
Maria Cruz, our guest, she's documenting the histories of the people and the movement of the Brown Berets. And so how were these, as they organized, as this youth movement in Wisconsin took action, how were Brown Berets treated or seen by others as we moved through the 70s here, Maria?
Well, in the early 60s, it was mostly marches, protests, demonstrations. Once they had a camp out at UWM when they took over the chancellor's office. So they were very active. But later on in the 70s, they became involved in other activities, and I'll mention some of them. One of the Brown Berets, for example, Maria Moreno, actually worked as the lead secretary and coordinator for the Latin American Union for Civil Rights. Another one of the Brown Berets, Juan Alvarez, who has since passed, he became educated and had a degree from Massachusetts and returned.
Oh, did we lose Maria there? It's an opportunity for us to take a brief break, reconnect with Maria, and bring in our next guest, who Maria alluded to, Ramona Villarreal, who was a leader of the Brown Berets back in the 70s. And if you have a question about this movement, or if you have a story to share and add to this rich history, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. We'll reconnect and continue our conversation with Maria Cruz, retired educator who's documenting the histories of the Brown Berets, and maybe you at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. So, how far would you go for what you knew to be right? It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're spending this hour with the Brown Berets of Wisconsin. We're sharing stories of Latino and Hispanic activism in Wisconsin. We've been talking with Maria Cruz, who's documenting the histories of members of the Brown Berets, and she stays with us. Also joining us now is Ramona Villarreal. She started organizing at 16 and was a leader of the Brown Berets in the 1970s, and she is the reason I'll ask you again, how far would you be willing to go for what you knew to be right? 1-800-642-1234 to join us. The email's available, ideas@WPR.org. Ramona, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Welcome. Hey, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. You're coming through loud and clear, and thank you for joining us. You marched from, and this was in the 1960s, you marched from just outside Milwaukee all the way to Madison. Can you take us back to that day, what it was like, and what you were marching for?
Yes, I was. I did a lot of marches, and one of the marches was from Wautoma to Madison, and the other one was from Milwaukee to Madison. I am a proud person. My name is Ramona Villarreal, to be a Brown Beret. I was very young when I got involved as an activist, and being young and aiming for the goals that we had as an activist. It was quite different compared to the years that we live here now. Everything was new. The fact that I became in March in different conditions, aiming for all the demands that we wanted, like better wage, improvement of housing, all the other stuff that we march and fight for as an activist, boycott and fight for the Latino rights. It was quite an amazing experience, because at this time we were all young. We all had the same purpose. And my philosophy was at that time when I was young, one person cannot do it all and they cannot hear us. We need be united and be together and march for the same cause. And as an activist, I fought to fight for the cause, and I would always fight, and I'm still an activist.
Still an activist today, Ramona Villarreal. What tell us a little bit about what your role or duties as the leader of the Brown Berets was back in the 70s, Ramona.
So the Brown Berets were a very, when I participated in the Brown Berets, our duties was to help the Latino people, to help anybody who we were having any kinds a trouble. For example, we marched for a purpose. When we marched the march from Madison, from Wautoma to Madison, it was for present demands. It took us about 5 days, and it was 84 miles. It was for a better wage, improvement of housing, as accident, like I said, hospitalization insurance and toilet facilities. Also, herbs and pesticide. The marshes was demand. At that time in Wautoma, we had about 18 to 20,000 migrant workers who will travel from Texas to Wisconsin. And it was a little town in Wautoma, and we united together with the Obreros Unidos. And at that time, Cesar Chavez was also rising with the other part of California. But we were all together and coming to the capital to talk to the governor to treat us equal as an activist. We fought for what we believe and for the rights.
Ramona Villarreal is an activist and former leader of the Wisconsin Brown Berets back in the 1970s. Also joining us, Maria Cruz, who is documenting the histories of members of the Brown Berets and the organization's history here in Wisconsin. And if you have a question or a story, you can add that at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. And you sort of laid it out there, Ramona, some idea of what these migrant camps were like before, before you demanded better conditions and you did so collectively. What was it like for coming here as a young kid, and what was it like working here as a migrant worker?
Well, we work in the fields, and of course we didn't make a lot of money and didn't get paid. It was very hard. This was very hard for us. I come from a family of 15 brothers and sisters, and we came to Wisconsin for better life, to try to work, but we were treated different. We were treated like we had no rights, and most of us were all from Texas, born in Laredo, Texas, and we had to fight for our rights. I feel that this is a great, powerful book that Maria Cruz is putting together. She is a hardworking person who saw the need for this type of book to educate other high school kids or middle school kids. It is very important. I am also a former teacher who retired. And what I want to say is this. I was very proud to be a Brown Beret, and I will fight for the cause. I have to really thank Maria Cruz for the research and outstanding work in the book that she's putting together. Also, I have to also want to stress out Ernesto Chacon for his many years and still his leadership for fighting and being an activist for us, and also the Brown Berets, that we stand together and we'll make a difference for the youth also. And I also want to thank Rico Berto also for another Brown Beret fellow who also stand together. We all marched together. We all had a purpose. And these are the pioneer people who are going to be are going to make an impact for the students and the future generations to come. I am very happy and glad that I was a Brown Beret and I became educated too. And I was only 13 and 15 years old when I was there at the picket line. I was also a migrant, as I said, and also I boycott lettuce and grapes, and we had a purpose, yeah, and we had goals to accomplish. And little by little, we did. We made a difference. And with the education background and all, we over jumped the hurdles. But we're not done. Once you're an activist, you will always be an activist for the rest of your life.
Ramona Villarreal, what can today's activists learn from your work in the Brown Berets of going back for the last half century?
To get educated and to fight for what is right, not to give up, to make sure other people are around to see us in a nonviolent organization when we are fighting for a purpose, and respect others in many ways. However, we were not treated well, but we opened the doors. We're the pioneers. We opened the doors because many years ago, they didn't accept us, whether we were brown, different colors, yellow, Caucasians. We had all kinds of migrants of all different colors. We had Filipinos, we had all kinds of migrants, and they didn't treat us right. Why? Because we picked the crops. If it wasn't for us to lead the pass, the opening of the hands and the arms for us to have a better and better life.
And the other thing I take away, Ramona, is it's never too early to be an activist. You talk about 13 and 15 years old. How old were you when you led the Brown Berets?
I was 17 years old and 18, but I was 13 and 14 and 15. I was out there at the picket line. I even marched. I was side to side with Ernesto Chacon from Milwaukee to Madison, and I fought for the cause. I was a person that I never gave up.
Ramona,
and what I want the other ones to learn is not to give up.
Ramona, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Ramona Villarreal is former leader of the Brown Berets. Maria Cruz also joining us. She's documenting the histories of the Brown Berets. And you may have something to add at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and it's impossible not to be inspired by the stories of what it takes to make a difference here in Wisconsin. Leaders organizing communities, communities gathering around common goals, and common goals creating direct action, and in turn, direct action building stronger communities. That's how it works. In this hour, we've been sharing the history of the Brown Berets in Wisconsin, and now, with a bit of a better grasp on our past, we turn our attention to what's happening in the immediate present and what to expect in the future. We'll ask you how activism is different today than it was, say, 50 years ago. What can the generations of organizers learn from one another? 1-800-642-1234 to join us. Our guest, Maria Cruz, who is documenting the histories of members of the Brown Berets and the organization's history in Wisconsin. And also joining us, Walter Garone, who is the state commander of Los Brown Berets of Wisconsin currently. Walter, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
And before we get to what the Brown Berets are up to now, I want to double back with Maria for a moment and just ask Maria, as we had just spoken to Ramona Villarreal, who led the Brown Berets in the 1970s before she was 20 years old, and as we've also been talking about Ernesto Chacon and the work he did with the Latin American Union for Civil Rights and Rigoberto Hernandez, Maria, what is the common thread of these community leaders, these activists? What is it about them that makes their work so effective and makes a difference in our community?
Well, let me quote you a short quote, it's just a few lines, of Cesar Chavez, who was an inspiration to so many of us. And he succinctly said this, and he said, you cannot humiliate the person who feels pride. You cannot oppress the people who are not afraid anymore. And when you think about those words, is that in spite of all of these challenges that the Brown Berets went through and others, in spite of that, they had pride in themselves. They knew who they were. They knew their history. And as a group, they knew that there was strength as a group, and they accomplished many things because of that.
So pride and bravery, right? In the face of what most of us would fear.
Correct. And there was also always, but then life is a struggle, isn't it? There has always been a struggle for us, especially those of us who are of a Mexican descent in this country. Always. From the very beginning, from as indigenous people, essentially, as people who live in an occupied land, because once part of this country was of Mexico, we have had to struggle, but we have overcome struggle. And the Brown Berets are the epitome of how you can, through your struggle, through your pride, you can survive and make that footprint solid so that other generations can better themselves.
You can survive so that other generations will strive. Walter Garone is the state commander of the Los Brown Berets of Wisconsin currently. And Walter, as you hear these stories of the history, how does that lead you to the present? What does that make you think about the work that you're doing right now?
Well, that was actually what inspired us to start ourselves and retake the Brown Berets to a different level now. All the hard work and everything that everybody behind us did for the movement is really important to, first of all, thank all of them for, you know, paving the way for us. And basically, we just want to retake the same sentiment and just be out there with our people helping out on different social justice issues, conflict resolutions, things like that. We've been very fortunate to be having the community back up right now.
So, Walter, what kind of work are the Brown Berets of Wisconsin doing?
Oh, great question. Well, last 2 years since the pandemic from COVID or whatnot started, we decided to, I took a family. I'm going to start with that. I took an immigrant family to get some food from a food shelter. And since they couldn't provide an identification, they were denied food, believe it or not. So that broke my heart. It was just so sad to see people walking back home without, you know, at least a box of food. So we decided to start doing our own food pantry. And with other allies at Milwaukee Turner's, Milwaukee's Diapers Mission, there was plenty of allies that jumped in on it. We got to feed between last year and the year before over 16,000 families for free. No questions asked. So far, we passed over 10,000 desechable masks, over 100,000 reusable masks, trying to educate people on COVID and why they should take, you know, the vaccine. Conflict resolutions, plenty of those. So we've been keeping ourselves busy. Besides that, we also been helping with the Brown Berets from Wisconsin, been all over the country with members supporting different Brown Berets chapters in other states. Last year, we just went to Texas to one of the largest concentrations of kids arrested by ICE to demand their freedom and to end separation of families.
That's Walter Garone, who's a current state commander of Los Berets of Wisconsin. You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Also, our guest is Maria Cruz, who is documenting the histories of the Brown Berets. And Walter, you talk about going to Texas. You talk about the kids in immigration detainment. How do the Brown Berets work with politicians? How do you actually make the case for Latino equity? How do you access those channels of power to make a difference for the community?
We take it right to them. We usually go and do some lobbying and trying to meet up with some of these people that can actually make changes for us and try to hold them accountable, because that should be it. You know, to be honest, it's been too much of a lip service for all these elected officials, and nobody has really stopped and helped us. And we are quite frankly tired of it. So we're trying to wake up our community and show that we have a power, not only economically, but actually by voting. And if you don't, you know, you don't listen to us and you don't follow what we asking for or demand, definitely it's going to be repercussions, and we might not vote for you then.
What I'm hearing is when the people lead, the leaders will follow.
Absolutely.
Hey, Maria Cruz, I want to ask you, did the Brown Berets in your history, as you are writing this now, back in the 60s, did they experience a similar what Walter refers to here, politicians giving simply lip service?
definitely. I revert always to quotes. Recently in a conversation that I had with Ernesto Chacon, we were talking about the past and what happened. For example, there was definitely a lot of police brutality, a lot of racial profiling. There were times when you wouldn't even be served in restaurants because it was against the law or it was the policy. And so in talking about this and listening to what Walter said right now reminds me of what Ernesto Chacon told me. And this is what he said, that we have the right, the responsibility to protest against unjust laws. When there is no justice for us, then we must rise. And this is what I hear Walter and his group are doing as well. But this is what Ernesto said. If we do not receive the justice that we deserve as citizens of this country, he said, let the streets be our courts and the community our juries.
Let the streets be our courts and the communities our jury.
Yes, the struggle continues. And I am so elated to hear Walter and what he is saying and the courage that they have to stand up and insist to be heard when politicians and people who govern us and policies that are out there that do not address the needs of those who are in need, then we must rise.
That is Maria Cruz. She's a historian documenting the Brown Berets of Wisconsin. Also joining us, Walter Garone. He is the state commander of Los Brown Berets of Wisconsin. And Walter, I am curious. We still have 5,000 seasonal migrant workers, approximately thereabouts, come to Wisconsin each year to help with what we all depend on in our agriculture, production, planting, harvesting, and packing our food that we eat. What do we need to see in terms of policies in Wisconsin to protect our migrant workers?
Well, better to be honest, they gotta check into more with health and safety. There's a big issue with that in different companies that be hiring migrant workers, especially when I don't know what you heard about when the COVID started. There were several people that came from Texas to work in a company I'm not gonna name right now. But they got sick, from COVID, and then they put them in a motel. Then they decided to put everybody that was migrant in a bus and send them back to Texas, sick. Oh. In the way back there, one person died, and the second one died a couple of days later when they got home and got a couple of family members sick. And if I recall correctly, one of them died as well. Here, they put them in some barracks, so small, living quarters. I used to be a union rep for many, many years, and one of my jobs was that I was a health and safety director, and it was to check the barracks. And some of the barracks are not even, to be honest, not in living conditions. So definitely we need to start pushing harder on that, making sure that we are holding these companies that are profiting from brown people accountable.
And finally, Walter, coming up later this summer in July, I believe, the Brown Berets of Wisconsin are hosting its first inaugural Zoot Suit Ball. Tell us about it.
Oh, yes. We are pleased to invite the whole community of Wisconsin to our first annual Zoot Suit Ball. The event, to be honest, it has the purpose to promote Chicano, Latino art and culture. We want to promote music as well and recognize all the Brown Berets before us who paved the way and fought for a better Wisconsin. It's going to be a great time. We are going to do it in Milwaukee downtown in one of the most iconic places, Milwaukee Turners. And it's going to be great. The reason we decided to have it in downtown is because we want to show everyone other cultures as well, how us brown people can, be out there right next to you and have a great time with you guys. And hopefully everybody trying to be there and enjoy our culture, learn a little bit more about us and what we do.
The Zoot Suit Ball coming up later in this summer in July in Milwaukee. Looking forward to it. Walter Garone, the state commander of Los Brown Berets of Wisconsin, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
A pleasure.
Also staying with us for the remainder of the hour, Maria Cruz, who is documenting the histories of the members of the Brown Berets and the organization's history here in our state. What questions may you have for them before we're done this morning? 1-800-642-1234 to join us or email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Late last year, the Republican Party opened a Hispanic community center in Milwaukee, where earlier this month, Senator Ron Johnson held a roundtable with some leaders of the local Latino community. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and at that roundtable, according to the Wisconsin State Journal, Pastor Marty Calderon explained to the senator that opening the office was, quote, a great thing, but now to see more of the boots on the streets. And in that one exchange, you could kind of see that politicians recognize the power of Latino and Hispanic communities, while community leaders made clear where that power comes from: boots on the streets. So what can you impart to us about effective activism and community empowerment? 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Maria Cruz has been with us for the hour, documenting the histories of members of the Brown Berets and the organization's history here in Wisconsin. And Maria, hearing about the inaugural Zoot Suit Ball coming up in July is exciting, but another legacy of the Brown Berets is the Mexican Fiesta Festival in Milwaukee, where thousands gather to celebrate culture during Mexican culture during a three-day event. How did the work of this organization turn into a celebration of Mexican culture decades later?
Oh, my. You asked the interesting question. It just so happens that it was through the effort of several of the Brown Berets, including Ernesto Chacon and the Latin American Union for Civil Rights, that began the Mexican Fiesta activities. It was actually a street street festival, and it was a community grassroots effort, and from that grassroots effort came Mexican Fiesta, and it was amazing. I happened to be part later on of the Mexican Fiesta organization. It was phenomenal how people, hundreds of volunteers would come together to put this yearly event. You see, it was important for us of Mexican descent to let everyone know, including our own people, about our history, our culture, our music, our food, our song, our just being together as a people. Exciting, exciting times. One of the other things that they did through LAUCR and the Brown Berets, as a matter of fact, getting back to the culture of our ancestors. In 1970, a courageous group of high school students initiated and carried out a walkout. They literally walked out of their classrooms. And why? Because they insisted that they be allowed to celebrate their own origins, their own ancestral beginnings by their music and their songs. It was amazing. But it was not only just the Mexican American youth, it was also the Puerto Rican youth that came together. I marvel at how once we know who we are, we will take a stand and insist and let people know, here we are. This is what we do. This is what we believe in. This is our culture. This is our language. This is our music. Enjoy it with us.
Maria, one of the central themes that we've come back to all hour with you, with Ramona Villarreal, who led the Brown Berets in the 70s at a young age, with Walter Garone, who is the commander currently, is the importance for education and knowing your history. And if you know your history, then you are in some ways, as all of you have explained, sort of compelled to act. Is that accurate?
Yes. excuse that I have to go back to a quote. But this is what our very, very famous and beloved leader, Cesar Chavez, says. He said, once social change begins, it cannot be reversed. You cannot uneducate the person who has learned to read. We're back to education, aren't we?
Maria Cruz is a retired educator documenting the histories of the brown race in Wisconsin. But you mentioned the walkout. And you know what? We've seen students walking out in schools in Florida recently. You mentioned, and we talked to Ramona, who walked between Milwaukee and Madison twice during her time of activism as a young leader in the brown berets. But there's also the sit-ins and all of these direct actions. So let's take a moment for the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and you alluded to this early in the 70s, there were approximately 30,000 Latinos in the Milwaukee area, but only 12 enrolled at UWM in 1970?
Yes.
Wow.
And you know what happened? Once again, the brown berets were involved, as well as many, many other people. The audacity that young people should demand education. And so what they did is that they tried to negotiate, first of all, with the university officials to no avail. So they said, okay, you're not going to listen to us. Then we are going to march. And they marched to the university, and they had what is called a campout. In fact, I'm sitting here in my living room looking at the pictures. I see the brown berets under a tree waiting out until somebody paid attention to them. I see Maria Moreno reading her textbook. She was a student at that time, once again, out on the campus, reading her book, waiting to be heard. Unfortunately, a price had to be paid. Some of the people were actually arrested. Because, see, that's what happens during these times. But you know what? They did listen to them. And the tenacity and the persistence of these young people and those who collaborated with them did come to some fruition. And what happened is that the university instituted what they called the Spanish-Speaking Outreach Institute, which later became the Roberto Hernandez Center, which is still working now or bringing in students at UWM. But let us remember one thing. One of the missions of UWM is to reach out to urban youth. We must make our universities, not just UWM, we must make them sit up and notice that we need to reach out to all young people in the cities, in the towns, wherever. We must educate our young people. Without education, without information, you know what's going to happen? What's going to happen is that our history will be revised. We will not be heard. We will be erased from history if we do not educate our youth. Right. And we know that we're in the middle of this right now. Even some legislature is out there now, or proposed legislature, to literally eliminate some segments of our history. That is not correct.
Maria Cruz, thank you so much for this hour, and very much looking forward to your book, Los Brown Berets de Wisconsin. Thank you.
Thank you.
Also joining us earlier this hour, Ramona Villarreal, who is a leader of the Brown Berets in the 1970s, and Brown Berets State Commander Walter Garone. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent today, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.